Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Happening now, breaking news. The state of Texas is now allowed to enforce a very aggressive and controversial immigration law after the United States Supreme Court did an about-face and lifted a hold on the measure for now. We're tracking the impact at the southern border, where many migrants may now be at risk of getting arrested. Also tonight, former White House advisor Peter Navarro just became the latest Trump ally to wind up behind bars. CNN was there as Navarro reported to prison for his contempt of Congress conviction and railed against judges, jurors, and Democrats. Plus, Donald Trump is doubling down tonight on his efforts to drive a wedge between American Jewish voters and Democrats as he continues to feed into ugly anti-Semitic views and stereotypes. We're breaking down what he's now saying and why it's so dangerous. Welcome to our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer. You're in the Situation Room.
This is CNN Breaking News.
And let's get right to the breaking news. The new ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court allowing a controversial Texas immigration law to be enforced while it's still being appealed. CNN's Rosa Flores has more on the law and the intense opposition to it.
Hundreds of protesters in Austin, El Paso, Brownsville, and other cities across Texas have raised their voices against SB 4. The new state law that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled today can go into effect pending the ongoing case in a lower court, which poses a direct threat to the federal government's dominant powers over immigration enforcement.
We're going to continue fighting.
SB 4 creates a state crime for the illegal entry into Texas or an individual's, quote, illegal presence in the state, and gives local law enforcement the power to arrest and judges the power to remove violators. Human rights groups warn it will lead to the racial profiling of Latinos, who make up 40% of the state's population.
We're fighting against racism, xenophobia, and white supremacy.
This new state crime will mostly be adjudicated in county courts.
It will clog our courts.
Adam Haynes from the Texas Conference of Urban Counties lobbied against SB 4 on behalf of these 34 Democratic and Republican-led counties and says that the 6,000 to 7,000 county jail beds across the state could fill up in days.
Senate Bill 4 is finally passed.
The law, which was passed by the Republican-led Texas legislature and signed by Republican Governor Greg Abbott last year, did not include funding.
There's going to be lots of negative impacts, lots more racial profiling.
El Paso County Commissioner David Stout estimates a new jail in his county could cost $250 million to build and $40 to $50 million annually to operate.
This will be the single largest unfunded mandate that we have seen.
Stout led the charge in his county to sue Texas over SB 4 and says he's in talks with the district attorney and local law enforcement about interpreting the law narrowly to lessen its impact on county resources.
Are you hoping that local police and the sheriff's office focus on violent crime and not on targeting migrants?
I mean, that's, I think, what they typically do.
Senate Bill 4.
Abbott maintains Texas has constitutional authority to enforce SB 4 and that it will not lead to racial profiling.
Officers understand, and that is wrong to profile.
Wherever you may come from.
Civil rights groups are hosting Know Your Rights workshops in cities hundreds of miles away from the border, like Houston.
It was era racista.
To educate Hispanics, like Gelasio Velasquez, an undocumented mechanic who has lived here for 25 years.
Terrorizar a los inmigrantes indocumentados.
He says that the objective of SB 4 is to terrorize the undocumented communities.
But unlike many undocumented immigrants, Velasquez says,
no tengo miedo.
He's not afraid. He finds solace in the better life he's building for his three U.S. citizen children.
A special thanks to Rosa Flores for that report. I want to bring in CNN White House correspondent Priscilla Alvarez right now. She's done extensive reporting on the entire immigration crisis for us. Priscilla, what is the Biden administration's response, first of all, to this U.S. Supreme Court decision?
Well, Wolf, put simply, the White House say that they, quote, fundamentally disagree with this ruling. In a statement this afternoon, the White House saying that SB 4 will not only make communities in Texas less safe, it will also burden law enforcement and sow chaos and confusion at our southern border. Of course, this is a significant development in the ongoing feud between President Biden and Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who has slammed the administration over their border policies. The White House, meanwhile, has pushed back, criticizing the Texas governor for politicizing this issue and previously calling this law, quote, extreme. Now, as far as the substance of the law, the Justice Department has said that it violates the Constitution and would interfere with federal law enforcement operations. So on that front, this could cause an operational headache. And in talking to Homeland Security officials, they are monitoring the situation on the ground to see how it's implemented. And of course, only time will tell to see how exactly it interferes, if at all, with what the federal law enforcement is doing on the ground.
Priscilla Alvarez at the White House for us. Thank you very much. Joining us now, a key negotiator on the now failed bipartisan border deal, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. First of all, what's your reaction to this U.S. Supreme Court decision today allowing this very controversial Texas law to go into effect?
It's going to create a mess at the border. You can't have two different immigration enforcement systems, one run by the federal government, one run by the state government. It's going to cause disorder. It's going to cause conflict. And what is wild to me is that Governor Abbott is one of the primary opponents of the bipartisan border security bill. If passed, it would have allowed us to secure the border. It would have put $20 billion of new resources on the border. It would have allowed President Biden to shut down portions of the border when crossings get too high. And so the very Republicans who are cheering this ruling today are the ones that have been creating the disorder at the border by opposing bipartisan tough border security measures here in Congress. So this is going to make the situation worse, not better at the border. And I hope Republicans come to their senses and stop listening to Donald Trump, who wants to oppose this legislation because he's rooting for a mess at the border, and instead join Democrats to pass historic tough border security legislation.
Texas lawmakers, they blame President Biden for failing to protect the border. They say they've been forced to take these steps to secure it. Should states be able to act if the federal government doesn't?
But President Biden negotiated the toughest border security bill with Republicans in 40 years. It included $20 billion of new resources at the border. It gave the president the authority with federal resources to control the flow of people at the border. It was Republicans, Texas Republicans, that submarined that effort. So there is an ability for Republicans and Democrats to come together to be able to allow the federal government to control the border. It is Republicans that are stopping the federal government from having the resources available to control the border. To the extent that there is disorder at the border right now, it is Republicans that have themselves to blame for opposing the bipartisan bill that they asked for and they helped negotiate.
Critics say this Texas law will lead to increased racial profiling of Latinos, and it comes as Trump used rather dehumanizing language about migrants, calling them at one point animals. What concerns do you have about that?
Well, let's be very clear. The people that are coming to the United States are fleeing terror and torture, yes, sometimes destitute poverty. They are looking for a better life inside the United States. Republicans make up this narrative about a migrant crime surge. Violent crime is going down in the United States. Migrants to the United States commit crimes at a rate lower than those who were born here in the United States. So we need to be very vocal in pushing back against this narrative that migrants pose a unique threat to safety here in the United States. No, we can't manage 10,000 people crossing the border on a daily basis. But the way to do better is to pass the bipartisan border bill and to get Donald Trump and Republicans off the sideline and support that legislation that would make a big difference.
While I have you, Senator, I want to quickly turn to this House hearing today, a very important hearing on the chaotic withdrawal, U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan. I want you to listen to how two of the top now retired U.S. generals responsible for that withdrawal tried to shift blame for those blunders earlier today. Listen to this.
The general consensus of the military, up through and including the Secretary of Defense, was that the embassy should be coming out, roughly speaking, at the same time we should be coming out.
The president's decision was to maintain an embassy, to not require our citizens to leave, and of course, to not expedite the extraction of at-risk Afghans. This was not a military decision. It remains my opinion that if there is culpability in this attack, it lies in policy decisions that created the environment of August 2021 in Kabul.
So, Senator, what responsibility do you think the Biden administration bears for what happened?
So, I think it is absolutely unrealistic to believe that in the face of the unplanned, unanticipated overnight collapse of the Afghan government and the Afghan military, that we were going to be able to withdraw American forces, American personnel, and friends of America in an orderly manner. I weep at the scenes from that withdrawal. I still grieve for the Americans that we lost. But after the Afghan government abandoned post virtually overnight, there was going to be no way for us to conduct that withdrawal in a means that didn't involve some amount of chaos. And so I think the president made the right decision. I think the bulk of my constituents agree that it is better off that the United States is now still not mired in Afghanistan. And well, there are certainly things that could have gone better. This belief that many critics of the president have is that with a few policy tweaks here and there, we could have orderly evacuated all of our assets without a cooperating Afghan government, I just think is unrealistic.
Senator Chris Murphy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Just ahead, a new filing from Donald Trump pleading with the U.S. Supreme Court to grant him presidential immunity in his election subversion case.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Light, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, a one-time member of Donald Trump's White House team is beginning a truly historic prison sentence. Former Trump advisor Peter Navarro is now doing time for defying a congressional subpoena in the January 6th Select Committee investigation. CNN's Randy Kaye was there as Navarro surrendered in Miami.
That's former Trump White House advisor Peter Navarro, minutes before he turned himself in to federal prison in Miami as the first former White House official to be imprisoned for a contempt of Congress conviction.
When I walked in that prison today, the justice system, such as it is, will have done a crippling blow to the constitutional separation of powers and executive privilege.
Navarro was convicted in September of contempt of Congress after refusing to comply with a subpoena from the House Select Committee, which investigated the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Liz Cheney, who was vice chair of the panel, said Navarro would have been a witness.
In America, no one is above the law. Every citizen has a duty to comply with a subpoena.
Navarro argues he was bound by executive privilege, a defense that's been rejected in court.
Do you wish you had shown up for testimony and asserted privilege in person?
If I had gone to Congress and played the piecemeal game with them, I would have done damage to the separation of powers, and I would not have been doing my duty. I would not have been obeying my oath of office.
Before he turned himself in, Navarro continued to paint himself as a victim.
I'm pissed. That's what I'm feeling right now. Every person who has taken me on this road to that prison is a friggin' Democrat and a Trump hater.
Just last week, Navarro asked the Supreme Court to intervene and allow him to remain free while he challenged his conviction. The High Court rejected his last-minute bid on Monday. Navarro has never been able to show that executive privilege would have applied in his case. The prison where Navarro will serve his time is one of the oldest prison camps in the country. While Navarro has complained about financial problems, the prison consultant he hired to make his time more comfortable inside told CNN that the 74-year-old will be housed in an air-conditioned dormitory for elderly male inmates. The consultant said Navarro will have access to television, email, and be able to make phone calls, and he'll be expected to take classes and get a job. He'll likely also be able to hear the roar of the lions from the zoo next door. As Peter Navarro headed off to officially turn himself in, he left us with this.
God bless you all. I'll see you on the other side.
And Wolf, it's also worth noting that Navarro's prison consultant has told CNN that he has two other clients, a doctor and someone engaged in politics, who are going to work with Navarro and help him acclimate on the inside. Wolf?
We'll see how he does in there. Randy Kaye reporting for us. Thank you very much. I want to bring in CNN senior legal analyst Ellie Honig right now. Ellie, what do you make of Navarro, a former Trump White House official, going to prison now for refusing to cooperate with Congress's January 6th investigation, while Trump himself continues to evade any sort of accountability?
Well, Wolf, it's an interesting question about what does it mean to really see accountability in this country. The reason Peter Navarro is behind bars right now is because he refused to give testimony that could have been damaging to Donald Trump. And he joins a long list of Donald Trump's advisors and enablers who have seen meaningful criminal consequences. Steve Bannon has been sentenced to 4 months for the same crime. He's on appeal right now. Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort, George Papadopoulos, all of them convicted for federal crimes, did time. And then you get to Roger Stone, Michael Flynn, all of them, both of them were convicted and then pardoned. So these are all people around Donald Trump who face meaningful criminal consequences. Whether Donald Trump himself will join that list, we will see in the months ahead.
All this comes, as you know, Ellie, as Trump has just filed his brief urging the U.S. Supreme Court to rule he has absolute presidential immunity. What are his key arguments?
So two main arguments in the brief that was just filed, Wolf. First of all, Donald Trump argues that he has immunity for any of his official acts that he engaged in as part of the presidency. Donald Trump, of course, argues that the presidency has very broad parameters. Now, DOJ is going to respond by that by saying, no, you were well outside the bounds of the presidency. You were trying to steal an election. The second argument that Donald Trump makes in his brief is that a president or former president can only be criminally indicted if he has first been impeached by the House of Representatives and then convicted by the U.S. Senate. That is an inventive argument, I'll say politely. It's not one that seems to have much basis in the Constitution or the law, but Donald Trump does offer it up in this brief.
Ellie Honig giving us excellent analysis, as usual. Thank you very much. Coming up, Donald Trump is unleashing new attacks on Democrats tonight, claiming they're opposed to the Jewish people and to Israel. Right now, polls in Ohio are just about an hour away from closing. The key race on the ballot tonight, the Republican Senate primary contest. I want to get an update right now from CNN's Jeff Zeleny. He's in Columbus, Ohio for us. Jeff, who are the candidates and what are we learning from some of these exit polls that have just been released?
Well, as you know, Ohio, a longtime presidential battleground, tonight is a Senate race battleground. All eyes are on this Republican Senate primary. Three candidates locked in a race to challenge Senator Sherrod Brown, the Democratic senator, in November. It will be one of the closest Senate contests of the year. There are three candidates, as you said. State Senator Matt Dolan. He is endorsed by the establishment Republican wing here, if you will. Governor Mike DeWine, former Senator Rob Portman. He is in a tight challenge with Trump-backed candidate Bernie Moreno, a Cleveland businessman. The Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose also on the ballot. So these three men vying for not only the winner to challenge Sherrod Brown, but also for the direction of the Republican Party, Wolf. This could be one of the last gasps of the establishment versus the MAGA movement, if you will. But we are getting a look at those exit polls tonight. Let's take a look at some of these preliminary numbers. And these were conducted by conversations and interviews with voters as they went to polling places across Ohio today, as well as early voting in the last couple of weeks. Some interesting findings here, Wolf. When asked about the opinion of Trump when he was president, 58% said they strongly approve, 20% say they somewhat approve, 7% somewhat disapprove, 13% strongly disapprove. Wolf, those numbers tell us a couple things. One, this is a very Trump-friendly electorate, a very MAGA electorate, if you will. Perhaps not surprisingly, of course, in Ohio, a state that was carried by 8 points by Trump in 2020. Going on to look at these numbers, do you think Biden legitimately won in 2020? 32% said yes, 62% said no. Also interesting, some 6 in 10 voters, Republican voters, saying that Joe Biden did not legitimately win the election. Again, similar to what we've seen in other states. And finally, just a vision and view of the Republican Party. When asked, the Republican Party is about right, 40% said that. Not conservative enough, 37% responded in that way, and 20% said too conservative. So, Wolf, again, these preliminary numbers offer a snapshot into the electorate today, and it certainly would seem that Bernie Moreno, the Trump-backed candidate in this race, we know he had strong support going in. The former president rallied here over the weekend, certainly a friendly electorate to him, but as well, talking to Republicans across the board here, Matt Dillon also had strong support going in. So about an hour left of voting here in Ohio. This race, the importance of it, though, will be in November when the winner of tonight's race takes on Senator Sherrod Brown in the fall, Wolf.
We'll see what happens tonight, and then we'll see what happens in November. Thanks very, very much, Jeff Zeleny, reporting from Columbus, Ohio. I want to turn now to Donald Trump. The presumptive Republican presidential nominee is expanding on his offensive, very offensive, new attacks involving Democrats, American Jewish voters, and Israel. CNN's Brian Todd is working the story for us. Brian, Trump is doubling down tonight on a familiar strategy of playing into various anti-Semitic views and stereotypes.
He is, Wolf, as he's done before, and it seems to be somewhat of a political calculation. Either way, the former president is taking serious heat tonight for all of his comments about Jewish voters. Disturbing comments from the former president on American Jewish voters. On a podcast, Donald Trump was asked about recent criticism of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that had come from the Biden administration and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Trump said those people, quote, hate Israel. Then,
any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion, they hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel will be destroyed.
Pressed on that today, Trump didn't back down.
I think that the Democrats have been very, very opposed to Jewish people, that's true, and to Israel.
It's all drawn a sharp response from the Anti-Defamation League.
It's prejudicial, it's patently false, and we have to push back. Whether you vote blue or red has not necessarily been an indicator of your passion or your support for Israel.
Trump's comments also brought immediate condemnation from the Biden White House, which said Trump spread, quote, toxic, false stereotypes that threaten fellow citizens. This isn't the first time Trump has been criticized for trafficking in anti-Semitic tropes or having his respect for Jewish people called into question. In a 2016 interview with CNN, he refused to condemn former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke?
I know nothing about David Duke. I know nothing about white supremacists.
Trump later claimed he had disavowed Duke. In his new book, The Return of Great Powers, CNN's Jim Sciutto quotes retired General John Kelly, Trump's former White House chief of staff, as saying that Trump once praised Adolf Hitler. Kelly saying, quote, he said, well, but Hitler did some good things. I said, well, what? And he said, well, Hitler rebuilt the economy. I said, sir, you can never say anything good about the guy. Nothing. In 2021, a spokeswoman for Trump denied that he had praised Hitler. As president, Trump also failed to counter anti-Semitic hatred, like after white supremacists' violent rallies in Charlottesville.
You also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
But as president, Trump did take actions that were very beneficial to Israel, like moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And he's often spoken glowingly about his daughter Ivanka, who converted to Judaism, and his Jewish grandchildren. Why would he make those comments about Jewish voters now?
The bet is that the Jewish vote has been so resoundingly pro-Biden and pro-Democratic that even weakening it just a little bit in a really close election could make a difference.
Today, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, according to Bloomberg, called Trump's comments, quote, disgusting and toxic. But Trump's campaign remains defiant, saying in a statement, quote, the Democrat Party has turned into a full-blown anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, pro-terrorist cabal, end quote. Wolf.
Brian Todd, thanks for that report. Brian Todd reporting for us. I'm joined now by CNN anchor and chief political correspondent Dana Bash and CNN senior political analyst Gloria Borger. Dana, as Trump doubles down on playing into these rather ugly anti-Semitic views, leading Republicans are avoiding commenting on all of this. What kind of impact could that have on Trump?
Well, I think the biggest impact that it could have on Trump is that he clearly has a goal to try to siphon some votes from the Jewish community in America that traditionally go to the Democrats over to him because of some of the things that he did do when he was in office, moving the embassy, but also, maybe most importantly, the Abraham Accords, which did allow for a broader peace. That is very much not happening right now, obviously, because of what happened with Hamas, the war between Gaza and Israel. The question is whether or not by the former president saying what he said on the radio show, doubling down, as you heard in Brian's piece today, whether or not it's going to have the opposite effect, that American Jews who may not be thrilled with the way that the Biden administration is right now approaching Israel might look at Trump and say, I'm sorry, you're not going to tell me what I feel and what I believe as a Jew. And just anecdotally, I've certainly heard some of that. Never mind, Wolf, what we need to underscore, which is what he said is an age-old anti-Semitic trope questioning the loyalty of Jews in the country that they're living in, asking if they believe more in their religion or if they're patriotic to the country that they live in. It's a false choice.
Yeah.
And who is Donald Trump, by the way, to raise this issue? I mean, he is effectively telling Jews in America what they ought to believe. And that if they vote for Democrats, and by the way, there was a recent poll which showed that 71% of Jews do vote for Democrats, that they're being disloyal to Israel. And it is absurd, it's defamatory, and it's just a patent play, as Dana was saying, to siphon off some of those voters that he thinks may be available to him. But it's absolutely ridiculous. He did it when he was in the Oval Office in 2019. Brian's piece talked about Charlottesville, good people on both sides. This isn't something new we're hearing from Donald Trump, but still it's sort of stunning every time you hear it.
It's interesting, Dana, because these latest Trump comments come as our own Jim Sciutto reveals in his brand new book that Trump privately praised Hitler, saying, and I'm quoting him now, he did some good things. You and I have seen firsthand what unchecked anti-Semitism can do when we were both at Auschwitz last year. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was almost a year ago that you and I went to Poland and went to Auschwitz in particular and did see what unchecked anti-Semitism can lead to. And that is an entire society ending up supporting the notion of mass killings, concentration camps, and the goal of extermination of the Jewish people. And that's why silence is not an option. And that's why explaining what these tropes are and what their origins are and what they have ended up doing in various societies, not just in World War II, but at other times in human history, is critical.
You know, and what Donald Trump is doing is dividing. This is what he does best. This is how he earns his keep every day, which is to divide the electorate in different slices. And what he's trying to do here is divide the Jewish community, which is, of course, struggling with what's going on in Gaza and what happened during the terror attack. And he's further trying to divide a community and just, you know, play for some votes. It's actually deplorable.
It certainly is. All right, Gloria Borger, Dana Bash, to both of you, thank you very, very much. Just ahead, my interview with a key UNICEF official who is on the ground in Gaza right now as the United Nations issues very dire warnings about imminent famine there. Stay with us. You're in the Situation Room.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Right now, the United Nations is sounding the alarm in Gaza as the threat of famine grows worse by the day. According to UNICEF spokesman James Elder, desperately needed relief is just across the border, but is not getting in. Listen.
Outrageous how many life-saving supplies are so desperately close to those who need them. Food, water, medicines, life-saving supplies, because we know just across there in the border, children have died of malnutrition. Children have died of dehydration. These are the supplies that so urgently need to get across into the civilians of Gaza.
And James Elder is joining us now live from Rafah in Gaza. James, thank you very much for joining us. You say that Gaza is terrifyingly close to famine. Walk us through what you actually saw in Rafah today, the impact of this aid being held up.
Yeah, a couple of things, Wolf. One is simply that you see in the face of children, you see now the children are gaunt. You see the stress and anxiety on families, parents spending days looking for food. That's Rafah. I was also in the park, which is right next door, which is probably the most devastated place I've seen in my years of the United Nations. Annihilation, the hospital there that was such a part of providing health for children. That is simply no more, no longer, like most hospitals in Gaza. This is a braver time. And somehow, Wolf, it's getting worse.
The UN's top human rights official is now warning that Israel could be committing a war crime. Starvation, he points out, is a weapon of war. Do you see evidence of that on the ground?
We've seen children starve. We have seen children die. Malnutrition, that's a terrible thing to see. Well, remembering malnutrition is a killer, but it's normally an underlying killer. They will have something like an ammonia, kill boys and girls. Malnutrition means that dehydration, child is in a hospital, their body shrunk so much, a doctor can't get into a vein. This is what we're starting to see. So the numbers speak to this. We are seeing catastrophic levels of malnutrition higher than we've ever seen in the last 20 years in a particular country. So unfortunately, the numbers that people see on the ground speak to the most dire situation for boys and girls. And that's nutrition alongside disease, with about 90% of children have some type of infectious disease. These two things together can be just as lethal as bombardments from the sky.
We're showing our viewers some of the videos of the complete destruction, your videos, complete destruction in Khan Yunis. What are you seeing and hearing about the toll this war is taking on families, especially on the children?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, families are just utterly exhausted. Several times today, I had mothers that should hold my hand and break into tears, hoping somehow could help them protect the children. They know it's up to them to try, but they know the power has been taken away from them. They know they don't have the power to ensure protection for the children from starvation, from air attacks. This is that level of exhaustion. People are now starting to accept that the reality is so great that they're faced. Now, we know that, as I say, there are trucks across the border miles away. Get a ceasefire, Emery, a ceasefire. When we're talking children, there are still children somewhere here who are held hostage. For goodness sake, let the pain for them and their families in Israel end. Get those children home. All these things happen with a ceasefire. Somehow, we are a long way away from that, and it's been a long time since anyone here has had anything resembling peace.
James Elder of UNICEF, thank you so much for joining us. Stay safe over there, and we'll be right back. Right now, we have an update on the health questions and the photo controversy that are swirling around the Princess of Wales and the British royal family. CNN's Max Foster reports on a new sighting of the princess as another photoshopped royal image was revealed.
Smiling, happy, and seemingly healthy. New video, not sanctioned by the palace, but reassuring royalists that the couple are well. British tabloids also celebrating Kate's re-emergence and apparent recovery from surgery.
So it's good to see that she's back and hopefully she's doing well.
I'm sure that it'll be quite nice for her to walk around, do some shopping with her husband.
I don't really have any doubts. I don't know. It's just a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
Weird because of the conspiracy theories that have swamped social media in recent weeks, filling a void of information from the palace. And the video did nothing to quell them, as it was accused of being fake. Trust in any royal imagery undermined, in part, by Kensington Palace itself, after it sent out not one but two doctored photos to the news media, both taken by the princess. Kate's edited Mother's Day photo, manipulated in several places. And now this one, released last year, which Getty Images has now labelled digitally enhanced. CNN found inconsistencies in several spots, such as a misalignment on the Queen's skirt and blanket. Strands of Princess Charlotte's hair appear to have been cloned, and Prince Louis's shoulder is blurred, overlapping the background. Getty told CNN in a statement it's reviewing all so-called royal handout images and placing, where relevant, an editor's note saying it could have been digitally enhanced.
William and Kate, Kensington Palace was so trusted at Christmas. And now, 3 months later, we have a situation in which whatever photo is put out, people don't believe it.
The lack of information coming from the palace about the princess has created conspiracy theories, often wild ones, which get worse when the palace has been found to be manipulating images.
Either they should have said nothing and kept with that, just as they said they were not going to say anything until there were significant updates, or they should have put out a few little statements, perhaps a little statement from Kate saying thank you for the lovely cards, and kept people updated to a degree.
Seemingly unfazed and in good spirits, royals refusing to be distracted in public. Prince William making a long-planned visit to a homelessness project in Sheffield. No lack of support there, or from the papers, as the rumours continue online.
More stories in the papers tonight here, Wolf. More speculation online, more rumours. It's difficult to see it ending until we actually see the princess out at an official engagement, which we're not expecting for another 2 weeks.
Max Foster reporting. Thank you very much, and we'll be right back.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.